One of my lifelong heroes, a 20-year congressman, worked with Ronald Reagan to fight abortion at a federal level. This is Congressman Bob Dornan. Bob, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Reverend Bob Enyart, for the rest of my life, I'm indebted to you. I got your documentary, Focus on the Strategy, that you gave me seven simple words that I will never look at another piece of pro-life legislation without saying those words.
But what are those seven words?
And then you can kill the baby.
It's a bad law if it says, and then you could kill the baby.
And then you can kill the baby. If you do this, that parental notification, your documentary, everybody in America who wants to be part of a good fight, they must get that documentary on the strategy.
Thank you, Bob Dornan. That was Bob Dornan, U.S. Congressman, fought for life for many years. We appreciate him and are thrilled with his endorsement for our video, Focus on the Strategy.
Welcome to Bob Enyart Live. Don't forget TV 53, Friday and Saturday nights at midnight. Bob Enyart Live back on television. Hey, we have a call on line one from the El Paso County Jail. Bob, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Well, greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church and currently an inmate in the El Paso County Jail in Colorado Springs because of our Dobson Pledge protest. In the fall, American Right to Life organized a protest that focused on the family, and so I'm doing what turns out to be 9 days, Lord willing. I'll be released on Thursday, and Ken Scott, another member of American Right to Life, is also in the jail here. He's doing 11 days, and he and I were separated after the first 24 hours, so I'm sure he's doing well, but I haven't been able to talk to him. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things going on in the jail, and then I'd like to read to you a letter that I sent to Jim Daly, the president of Focus on the Family. I've sent three letters, one to Ambassador Alan Keyes in Maryland, and another to the Colorado Springs Gazette, and then that one to Focus on the Family. Before I get to that, a couple things about being in jail here. Everything from the food to the accommodations to the fellowship and evangelism and Bible study. Last night, about maybe 11 o'clock at night, the guys in our section, we have eight guys, and there's a pod of 72 guys. And we have eight in our section and four bunk beds. So about 11 o'clock last night, we were talking just about being in jail, and the subject of food came up, and the guys were complaining about how terrible the food was, and if you see an old movie with lousy food in prison, they must have filmed the movie here at this jail, because it looks exactly like you'd expect it would look. And I said, you know, if I want good food, I'll go to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. I won't go to jail for good food. And the one Mexican guy above me, he was cracking up. We're having a great time of fellowship. Some guys are really suffering. Others are doing fine. About the accommodations, you know, jail is not a time when you get served. Obviously, you're the prisoner. And for me personally, I've developed a problem sleeping on these pads. My back is out of whack. I threw my back out. And so for the last two and a half nights, I haven't been able to lay down at all on the bed, which means I've had to either stand or sit on the floor all night. And I put in to see a doctor or a nurse, but that take 10 days to see a doctor, and I should be out by Thursday. But, you know, the criminal justice system, it shouldn't have to be worried about people's diabetes and your sacroiliac and all this stuff if you throw your back out of joint. That's just an example, another indicator that the whole incarceration system is a mistake. We've got about 2 million people in jail in America, and it's a real tragedy. So, but anyway, certainly you could pray for me, pray for Ken Scott, and all the inmates here at this jail. But I'm doing it right. It's just I haven't been able to sleep at all since I can't lie down with my back problem. So we'll see what happens with that. I've mentioned that we have, I've had a couple talks with guys who said that when they impregnated their girlfriends, they suggested they get an abortion, and how the women, you know, refused. And that, of course, is consistent with what we've said on Bob and Your Live over the years, that men are way more pro-abortion than women are, because women could sense that they have the baby within them. Well, one of my fellow inmates here, his young teenage daughter became pregnant, and he urged her, tried to talk to her in the, you know, kindest fatherly advice, and urged her to go ahead to Planned Parenthood. And he shared how she's so upset with that. And rightly so, she's now upset at her dad. And he has been wondering what to do about that situation. She's refused. She's going to have her baby. She already has the baby. She's going to take it to term. And I suggested that he apologize to her, apologize and say he should have never suggested such a thing. And he's agreed, which is exciting. A great opportunity to talk to people about right and wrong and God's word. I'd like to read to you the letter that I sent to Focus on the Family, the President Jim Daly. I have my draft copy here. Before writing a nicer version of it, I wrote this. And by the way, this is very similar to the letter that I sent to the Colorado Springs Gazette, just minus a couple personal notes about Dr. Dobson and Jim Daly. But here we go. Jim Daly, President, Focus on the Family, June 15th, 2009. Dear Mr. Daly, incarcerated in the El Paso County Jail as a member of American Right to Life, I'd like to clarify the reason for our Dobson Pledge protest. But first, in Saturday's Denver Post, your story was familiar. There was a big story about Jim Daly as the president of Focus. And I told him that his story was familiar because I had heard him speak in person at a pro-life fundraising dinner in Las Vegas 2 years ago. And I also said it was a heartening story, including various comments he made, including everything about his own wonderful family. And I appreciated his commitment that the ministry should not be run like the world. So then the letter continues to Jim Daly. Now, Focus on the Family has openly admitted in writing to us at American Right to Life and in interviews, you openly admit that Dr. James Dobson no longer upholds his famous pro-life pledge, yet by continuing to air that pledge, which you do on the radio, and to show it in the Welcome Center, that now broken promise, this is a dishonest representation to your supporters. Before hundreds of thousands of pro-lifers, Dr. Dobson invoked God's name and pledged that he would never vote for a politician who has exceptions to the unborn children he would protect. Well, that kind of leadership resonates with pro-lifers, but breaking that oath was a sin. Continuing to use it as a marketing tool to present a false image to your ministry supporters is unconscionable. And because Dr. Dobson invoked the Lord, use of that broken pledge is an ongoing affront to God. Everyone deserves, and we expect more from our Christian leaders. Bob Enyart, member of American Right to Life. So that's the letter to Jim Daly, president of Focus on the Family. Now, I'd like to, the letter to Alan Keyes was more personal and thanking him for his courage and leadership in getting arrested at Notre Dame. He was arrested the very day that we were on trial for our protest for, you know, a very similar thing, Christian leaders conspiring with those who will kill children for, you know, their own different reasons. The Bible study we had last night was another example of extraordinary ministry opportunity and spirituality in jail. This Bible study, we're going through Genesis, and we did about five chapters last night of the life of Joseph. And it is such a powerful time. For example, we've got 12 inmates, and one of them is one of the guys I've gotten closest to. It's a 19-year-old black guy whose parents were both dead by the time he was young. Father shot in a shootout with the police. And mother died of cocaine, and he remembers seeing his mother die when he's maybe 4 years old or so. Went through 9 foster homes, spent much of the last years incarcerated for juveniles and for adults. And now just yesterday he went to court, and he found out he's almost certainly violated probation, and he's going to be doing 2 years. So he found that out yesterday. Of course, he had tears in his eyes, and he and I talked for hours. Well, we get to the Bible study in Genesis last night. He's one of the guys, and it's all about Joseph, 5 chapters of the life of Joseph. And Joseph's family betrayed him, turned on him. His brothers sold him into slavery. He became a prisoner. And then because of his faithfulness to God, God used him mightily, and he ended up being the ruler over Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. And it's such a powerful story. You want to talk about biblical application to our lives and the testimonies that were shared, the thoughts. I mean, it's just an extraordinary, extraordinary time. While we're having the Bible study toward the end, one of the 12 guys was in a wheelchair. In fact, we've got 3 guys in wheelchairs here. And the guard shouted out his name and said, "Pack it up, you're leaving," which was such great news. And he was in, you know, at least I'd say 90% of everybody says they're not guilty. They didn't do what they're charged with doing. And it's sort of funny, you know. It's like nobody did anything. But, and the system encourages that, by the way. The judges tell people to plead not guilty, regardless of whether you've done it or not, right from the very beginning, from the arraignment. So the system teaches the criminals to lie to the court, lie to the judge, lie to themselves, and they do. So the whole system is broken. And part of that is because of Christian teaching. Okay, I was just slightly interrupted, but oh, and by the way, the guard just used the F word 3 times in front of all the inmates, of course, and even the medical staff, a nurse handing out medicine. So anyway, just normal in jail life. I was talking about how the inmates, it seems like 90% say they're not guilty. They didn't do whatever they're accused of. And that there are Christians like David Barton who will brag about, if you've ever heard of Blackstone's commentary on law, which is supposedly evidence of a biblical foundation of our criminal justice system. And It's so unbiblical in so many ways, Blackstone's books, if you ever get the chance to look at them or read some of them. There's, I think, 5 volumes. And, for example, Blackstone says you should not plead guilty. If you're accused of a crime, you should plead not guilty and go to trial. It's like, that is so antithetical to Christianity, to biblical justice. What, if you committed a crime, let's say, against a woman, let's say you assaulted a woman, then you're supposed to lie and tell the court you didn't do it and lie to her and put her through further misery? I mean, it's so wicked, and our criminal justice system has adopted that Blackstone commentary on law concept. And it's just another example of how Christians are told that leaders and authorities are so very biblical and Christian in their worldview and their principles, and so often they're totally humanist. Blackstone, he did reference the Bible a lot, but his main goal was to defend the status quo. The way the law was in England in the 1600s, that's what he did. He wrote a massive volume to defend the law, and he'd quote the Bible occasionally in order to do that. But he should have rebuked the wickedness of British law and called for biblical principles. But he didn't. He was a defender of the status quo, and so we have, I would estimate, 90% of inmates who say they're not guilty, they're innocent. And I brought that up because of the guy in the wheelchair in our Genesis Bible study last night. He was charged with violating his probation, I think, or parole, by testing positive for cocaine. And he absolutely insists it was a false positive, and he's got long hair. So it was fun thinking through that his hair is certainly long enough to cover that period of time when they said he tested positive for cocaine. So he's going to go through the expense and the difficulty of getting his hair tested to prove, he says, that he didn't do cocaine. So while we're having our Bible study, the guard called out his name and said, "Pack up your stuff, you're leaving." So somebody posted bond for him, and he was real excited to be able to leave. And he was going to leave our Bible study to pack up the stuff, and we suggested that one of the other guys go pack up the guy in the wheelchair's possession so that he could stay the last few minutes, and we could lay hands on him and pray for him since he's leaving. And, you know, it's just something to celebrate when you're leaving this place. So we did. It was really neat. And as he was wheeling himself away, I said, "Now remember, don't cut your hair." And he laughed. And I said, "Take the vow of the Nazarite." And it's amazing how inmates know the Bible so well. The vow of the Nazarite was that you would not cut your hair until a certain date. And so I suggested that he take the vow of the Nazarite until his case is resolved. So anyway, that's a bit of a distraction, but we did the Genesis study on Joseph's life, and the friend that I've gotten the closest to, his name is Sean. I was telling you about him earlier. Two parents dead by the time he's a young child, 9 foster homes, and he hears that he has 2 years, 24 months more that he's got to do. He went to court and found that out yesterday. And, of course, he had tears in his eyes throughout the day. And he and I spent some hours talking. And he's alternately filled with anger and depression. But he does have a belief in the Lord, but it's mixed so much with superstition. The superstition in jail among even the strongest Christians is pretty intense, but I guess we should expect that, since so much of Christianity is superstition these days, unfortunately. But he took heart, my friend Sean took heart in the story of Joseph, and that he was betrayed by his family, which this guy could relate to. You know, he was never a slave, but he's black, and certainly blacks in America think about the history of slavery and how that set them back economically in so many ways. And then Joseph became a prisoner, and this guy now is an inmate, and it looks like he's in for another 24 months, but he could get good time and maybe just be in for 13 months or more. But year after year, he spends his birthdays incarcerated, he spends the holidays, and what a tragic and broken life. And so talking to him and trying to show him where he's superstitious, but he needs to trust more in the solid biblical principles that come through God's Word and not in the superstition of interpreting dreams and things like that. So what else did I want to share with you guys? Well, about 2 o'clock last night, I mentioned that I'm not able to sleep. I've had to stand up or sit on the floor all night, 2 nights in a row, because my back went out and I just cannot lay down at all. So about 2 at night, one of the 8 guys in our group was reading. It's 2 a.m. He'd been reading for 2 hours, and I couldn't see what he was reading, but he got just so excited. It was like he was stunned, he was blown away, and I thought, boy, what is he reading? Some, you know, Hollywood movie novel or something? And he puts down his book and he sits up and he says, that is just the most amazing story of that king. What's it, King David and that woman that he committed adultery with? He said, it's such a shocking story. So here's this guy from California, Fernandez, and he's reading the Bible and he's absolutely loving it. And the stories in the Bible come to life for prisoners, for inmates. The stories of the Bible come to life, and Christianity is as real and as relevant in jail as anywhere else on earth. And that's so exciting about Christianity. You know, when a tragedy happens, when reality hits, like 9/11, people pack churches, they think about God, they pray. You know, they don't plan the next homosexual rights parade. They don't do a Planned Parenthood fundraiser. When reality hits, people think about God. So I've told you about now the 3 guys who said they told their girlfriends, or the one told his 14-year-old daughter that she should get an abortion, and she's so mad at him. So in all 3 of those examples, the men were more pro-abortion than the women, and the women took it as an insult, that don't you love me, don't you love my child? And the women were right. And I've encouraged those men, and all 3 men recognized that the women were right and that it's wrong. So there's tremendous opportunities in jail. By the way, I also get to read. I'm finding out why so many people read the Agatha Christie novels. I never have, and I'm just now halfway through her 87th novel, which was her last one, called Sleeping Murder, and she wrote it for posthumous publication so that it would be published after her death, and I think it was published long, long after her death, and so that's just interesting entertainment. The books available in our pod are so weird. So many of the books have like pink covers, and they have to do with brides. I don't remember the names of all these books, but they look like girly books. It's just the weirdest thing. But I did read another book called The Saint. You know, that fictional character Simon Templar, the sort of modern Robin Hood. And I did jot down one line that he said on page 171. Because I thought I could use it in some of my notes when we talk about democracy. He said this, partisan politics is, by its very nature, divisive. Partisan politics is, by its very nature, divisive. And, of course, that's true. Democracy is one of the most divisive forms of government. And so I just got a kick out of that. I've said that verbatim on the air for years. Now I find out Simon Templar said it, written by Burl Bearer. So I told you I wrote those three letters, by the way. I needed, of course, three stamped envelopes. And when we came to court, Ken Scott and I brought cash because we thought there was a chance we'd be sent to jail. And we also thought that our cash would go into our property when we were processed in and then be transferred to our books. And I asked the guard, could my cash, not a lot, but some money, be transferred from my property to my books so I could buy from the commissary envelopes and all? And he said, no, you can't do that. You can only release it to a visitor. And so I've had $0 on my books. That's not a problem. I'm getting out, Lord willing, on Thursday. But so how do you get stamped envelopes when you need them in a hurry and you don't have money on your books? Well, you trade. Bartering is big in jail. And so I traded my dinner last night for three envelopes. And they're 54 cents each in here with stamps on them. And so I thought I got a pretty good deal for dinner. But I'm just trying to give you an idea of what it's been like here in jail. And it is an...
You have 60 seconds left on this call.
It is an absolutely extraordinary experience. You can see why in the Bible that prophets and apostles had jail ministries from inside the jail. It's a great opportunity, and it's an honor to be here with Ken Scott and his members of American Right to Life, with the blessing of their president and Columbine dad, Brian Rohrbaugh. So thank you for tuning in. I've got to go. The phone system, you got to use your fingerprint to make a phone call and type in a long PIN code, but it's telling me I'm about done for the day. So I pray that you all are blessed, that God blesses you, and thank you for tuning in to Bob and Yart Live. And our website is KGOV, KGOV.com.
10 seconds left on this call.
KGOV.com, and our phone number is 800-8-N-YART.
We'll ride, and don't you stand on fences. Now whatever you do, with all of your might, do right, do right.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. If you'd like to hear more, then tune in weekdays at 3 right here on KLTT for Bob Enyart Live. Also, you could subscribe to our Bob and Yart Live Bible studies, our monthly videos, our sermons. For the Bible studies, you get an entire album on audio tape or MP3 CD for $34.95 a month. Or you could get our videos or sermons every month mailed to you for just $24.95 a month. To subscribe, please call 800-8-N-YART. That's 1-800-836-9278. That's 800-836-9278, or you could subscribe online at kgov.com. Also, Denver Bible Church, you're invited Sunday morning or evening for Bible study, worship, and fellowship. We have such a great time together, so come on out or check us out on the web at kgov.com for Bob and Yart Live.